The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. A chilly Monday here in Boston, Massachusetts. I am on the road, which is why this sounds so lousy. Sorry about that, but it is Martin Luther King Day, holiday weekend, and we couldn't resist doing not a mega BS report, but a little BS report. We have Mike Lombardi coming on later. Right now, as always, every Monday, our pal Cousin Sal, what's happening?
What's happening with you, Bill? You must be very excited to be in Boston this time of year. Patriots thriving as usual. What's it like?
Yeah. It's nice to be here when the Pats have a big win. Everybody's just walking around the next day with a nice little hop in their step. You see the hats, the shirts. It makes me want to move back. It's pretty emotional. For you, not as emotional because you hate the Giants, and now it looks like the Giants are in position to have their Super Bowl 42 rematch that has every Patriot fan frothing at the mouth. We all want the Giants again. What was your take on Giants-Packers?
Well, you know, I hate watching them. And I would love to spend 15 minutes ranting and raving about how lucky they were, you know, after they clearly were looking to run the clock out before half, and then Eli Manning closes his eyes and heaves a Hail Mary off his back foot into Hakeem Nicks's helmet and face mask. But that wasn't the story of the game. It really wasn't. The Giants' defense, I think that was one of the greatest playoff performances by a defense on the road ever.
Yeah,
we've seen like the Ravens beat the Chiefs and stuff and give up 160 yards, but aside from two atrocious calls, like they could have given up 10 points to the Packers, and I don't know how much that's attributed to the Packers' layoff and everything, but I'm just so impressed with that defense. Like they're rushing four guys, and to never have to blitz is such a bonus. You know, screws up these quarterbacks and, you know, Rodgers, whoever's back there is uneasy the whole time, and they are going to be tough to beat. And I don't know what to say anymore.
I agree. And the Hail Mary was almost like God's gift back to them for that terrible call that got overturned. So it all evened out. They can't complain about that call because they got the 7 points at the end on the Hail Mary, which happens three times a year. But you're right. It was a dominant performance. And I think that the biggest Achilles heel for this Giants team right now, overconfidence from the Giants fans. What do you think of that, Sal?
Yeah, well, there's always an abundance of that. I mean, it's just brutal watching these games with Giants fans. I have to hide my head. But, they might be overconfident, but do you feel like the Niners could beat them? I think, like, Alex Smith is going to have to do too much for this game. There's too much running again. I think they're going to have special teams touchdowns and everything else, because otherwise the Giants are riding this wave. It's not breaking anytime soon.
Do you remember, this doesn't happen that often when there's a fairly big upset pick like this. The Giants were getting 7.5. They were a little less than 3-1 underdogs on the money line. And yet all week people were pushing the Giants and saying that this could, you know, the 07 blueprint all over again. They have the formula. And it got to a point where I had a friend in New York who said he was, before the game, he was listening to WFAN, and people were talking about how the Giants are going to beat the Niners, and like they were already looking past the Packers, and he was like, this is crazy, we're definitely going to lose.
Yeah.
And yet it played out that way. Like you rarely see the overconfident, oh, this is what's going to happen, then it actually plays out that way. I was surprised by that.
It's not supposed to work like that. It really isn't. And, like, you know, and especially, like, you know, I was looking for reasons for the Packers to win. Like, they have to rally behind the offensive coordinator. They have to realize that they almost lost to him when they played early in the year. They can't look past the Giants. How could this even be close? Plus the bulletin board material of Pierre Paul, like, guaranteeing victory. Like, come on. Hey, step up for this game at least. They went out there and they crushed them. And what was I going to say? It doesn't seem like, you know, the rushing fire. I just can't get over the defense. I can't get over, like, how good it is.
Right. They probably have three of the best defensive linemen in the league.
Yeah.
And it's like, and this is what my friend Hershey was saying, you know, a few weeks ago. He's like, wait till we get those three guys back, because you can't double all three of them. And if you do, then the fourth guy it looks like Reggie White, because nobody's blocking him.
Right.
And, you know, now that they have those three guys back, it's kind of what we feared. And, you know, we talked about the Giants in our preview podcast, I remember. And we thought they had the best odds. Like, if you're going to do a long shot pick, that was the pick.
Yeah.
It's just weird to me that this is playing out like we could see. It almost makes me wonder, like, could San Fran be like the nobody believes in us pick this Sunday? I can't see anybody taking San Fran. I really can't.
You know, it's as far as playing out like we say it happens, it's funny, like you pointed out last week, like, what was it, like the three favorites had covered last week going into that Pittsburgh-Denver game. And I know people tweet me, like, it has nothing to do with anything, but I really feel it does. Like, you're going to take Pittsburgh over Denver, that's going to be a great weekend for gamblers. That's just going to be easy as pie, and it just doesn't work out. Same thing here, three home teams. All right, maybe you got tripped up by the Saints, but three home teams winning, you know, and like you said, that Sunday teaser of Ravens-Packers, it just wasn't going to win. It just wasn't.
It was too easy. Everybody had it. That was too easy. And then, you know, on top of that, just the fact that that line moved so early. What did it move, a point and a half? I guess it was a red flag, because Vegas just decided, usually the Sharps wait until Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that line, the Vegas was like, we're jumping that now. Like, we're grabbing those until that gets to 7. I'm actually surprised it didn't end up at 7, which is where I thought it was going to end. And it just kind of stayed at 7.5. And, you know, for me, that was the first of the 8 playoff games that I really just couldn't decide on. And eventually just felt like too many people were backing the Giants. It doesn't normally work out that way. Rodgers, though, not a good Rodgers game. You know, I know
it
he had some drops,
now,
but
there,
not,
there
not
were
an impressive.
Six and eight drops by receivers and running backs, which isn't his fault. And I think the ball hit the turf 5 times, and the Giants recovered all 5. And one should have been called a fumble, and it wasn't the Jennings thing. But the worst thing for Rodgers was that 3rd and 7 pass. I think the 3rd and 7, they're down 7, and he rifles it past Finley. And, you know, he was open by 10 yards. He didn't have to throw it so hard. And then he's, like, getting mad. It seemed like he was getting mad at Finley. Like, hey, why are we not on the same page? Like, oh, my God, that was your fault, dude. I don't know.
Right,
he was
a little jumpy.
There.
What about
that would have been big.
I had a 6-0 streak in the column going into that Baltimore-Houston game. I feel like I did everything right. T.J. Yates, obviously can't take him on the road. He had 0 touchdowns and 3 picks. I had a 17-3 lead. And yet somehow Houston covers by a half point. Not just that, it actually seemed like they were better. We were texting at halftime, and then we never followed through, or maybe you did. But Texans' second half looked like a pretty enticing bet because the Ravens were getting blown out on both sides of the ball, it looked like.
We didn't. I said Texans were getting 3.5 in the second half, and it went to 3, but at first it started at 3.5. I'm like, let's jump on this. They're just better. And they ended up getting outscored 3-0, so it would have won. But I was like, we have to do this. And you're like, no, we got to – Golden Globes tonight, we got to bet the artist the best picture. I'm like, what? All right, we'll just skip it then.
No, I said that for Oscar. The artist for minus 200 for best picture for the Oscars, the lock of 2012.
You're crazy.
Nobody's beating the artist. That's winning.
I know.
Did Clooney win best actor last night?
He won, he won best actor.
That was the other lock. He was minus 250. You pencil that in. There was no way Brad Pitt was winning for Moneyball.
For the Oscar or for the Golden Globes?
No, for Golden Globes. He was minus 250.
Oh.
That was a lock. He wasn't going to lose. But, you know, unfortunately, that means laying wood on the Golden Globes, which
too
nobody
much.
Should do because that's
rigged.
Should
have parlayed them with Houston in the second half. I know. But
what about Niners, Saints? Did you feel like that was like one of the all-time nobody believes in us games?
Yeah, I did. And, you thought they would give Brees trouble defensively, right? I mean, even though, like, you know, I was looking at that when, like, New Orleans went to Tennessee. I don't know. It was, like, late in the year. It was, like, the middle of December. And, like, Brees didn't, like, heat up till the fourth quarter. And I'm like, this is going to be a version of that game. And the Saints are going to give him a tough time. But I didn't think it'd be a scoring match. Like, what happened that last 4 minutes?
I know.
That was insane.
Yeah, it was kind of the, you know, it was the classic dome team outdoors, just and everything goes wrong game. We were saying, I texted you at halftime, like, how can a team that turns the ball over four times in one half ever advance in a playoff game? It just seems inconceivable, and yet we're sitting there. What were they up? They were up. They're up one with 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? The Saints are going to win this game?
Right.
It would have been outrageous.
Well, breeze through like 63 times, and we'll get to Tim Tebow and the Pats, but that's I think what Tim Tebow and the Broncos should have been doing, not handing off when you're down 35-10. You just got to keep throwing. Obviously, he has the tools, Drew Brees, more than Tebow, but that was an amazing game. And that Justin Smith, he's everything they say he is on defense for the Niners. You know Justin and Alden Smith are not related?
What?
I just found that out. Yeah, they're not. Yeah. Alex and Alden are, but Justin is. It's complicated, but yeah.
How happy were you to watch Tebow Mania just get annihilated?
It was great, but you know, I think we both thought like this game isn't going to be about Tebow, and
no.
Especially when they deferred. Did they defer the Patriots and the Patriots took the ball? Is that what happened? I think I read that they deferred.
I don't know, but the Patriots never usually have the ball in the first quarter, and this time they did.
Yeah, yeah, and they got it. Right, so they must have deferred. And, you know, I don't want to blame Tebow because it was over before he could do anything, but how does he not go over 11.5 completions? Really, you need three. You're down. You're playing catch-up the entire game, and you're not benched. It's almost impossible to not get three completions a quarter. And he's like I said, he's handing off down 35-10. And you say what you want about T.J. Yates, but at least he tried to go downfield. He tried to make a game
yep.
of it. And but Tebow didn't throw the ball at all. Like it's almost like they were like trying to save him. Like, all right, we're going to lose. We have like just like when a boxer knows he's going to lose 12 rounds to none and just tries to play it very safe, you know, and not get knocked out. Even though it couldn't have been more of a knockout punch, but. What do you think? You must be happy with them. I mean, they look the best out of all 8 teams, Patriots.
Yeah, I wrote in Friday's column, I was saying how it was a no-win game for the Pats because even if they – I think I even wrote, like, even if they win by 35 and Brady throws 6 TDs, the takeaway will be that they should have beaten Denver and that, you know, there's not even a lot of upside in that. But actually, the way it played out, I think there was upside. They got, you know, people are fired up. It was such a dominating performance and – and now with after how Baltimore played the next day, I think the thing that surprised me, it's funny because I'm getting emails from readers saying, oh, you don't want this, Super Bowl 42. And I haven't talked to a Patriots fan yet who doesn't 100% want to play the Giants again.
Yeah.
I mean, that has to be who we play out. I think it'll be actually a letdown for the fans if the Pats make the Super Bowl and they play the Niners instead of the Giants. Like, everybody, we're all locked in on the Giants. We want the rematch. It's time. Let's see it again. Eli, fine, show me the Tyree Helma catch 1,000 times. I'm fine with it. I want the Giants. I want my revenge.
Do you really? I was
yeah.
watching the game with my friend Nick, who's a Giants fan, and our friend Kevin Hench, who's obviously a Patriots fan. And Hench is high-fiving Nick every Giants touchdown. And I took a picture. I'm like, I'm taking a picture of this, and I'm going to show it to you 3 weeks from now. When it's like 13-13 in the third quarter, and you're like, where are all the points in this game? What are the Patriots, the defenses, Giants defense is frustrating. Brady, oh, my God, you're going to be pulling your hair out. But you really do want the rematch, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, Hench was terrified of the Packers just throwing the ball the whole time. My counter to that would be Manning and Nix and Cruz, I think, would be able to throw the ball the same way against this Patriots team. But it just feels like there's a certain karma to this Pat season that's unfolded where Denver's a team that, you know, they beat us in 05, they beat us in 1986. Then you have Baltimore that, you know, in 09, that was probably the bleakest moment in the entire Belichick dynasty when they just came into Foxborough and destroyed the Patriots and it looked like, you know, that era might be over. If you could go through them and then you exercise the Super Bowl 42 demons, that's a pretty nice 1-2-3.
That does work out. But we have to
and we beat
out.
The Jets twice, too, and two Jets regular season wins. So it's like it has the potential to be one of those seasons where you're settling all family scores. The problem is everybody thinks they're going to win this Baltimore game. Let's pick the lines for those.
All right, let's do it.
I picked, you guys
are the early game Sunday.
Yeah, I picked. And I think I had Pats by 9.
You had Pats by 9. I had Pats by 9. And I thought that was fair. I didn't want to make it double digits. And it's 7.5.
Yeah, that's pretty surprising.
Yeah. I mean, I think the odds makers are torn. Like, of the four winners, the Ravens obviously look the most flawed, and the Pats look the most complete, but against a 9-9 team. Are the Pats in where we're not effing around mode? Like, that's what you have to figure out. So.
Right. And also, you know, the one thing about the Ravens, and we saw this just happen with the Giants in Green Bay, the Ravens really do think that they have New England's number, and they're going to have a ton of confidence in this game that I think factors into the betting a little bit. Like, if you're a Packers fan, you did not want to see that Giants team on Sunday, regardless of how much you liked your own team, because you knew that Giants team at least knew they could hang with you and that they had the confidence to win. And that's how the Ravens feel. Now, my question is, I'm not sure they should have that confidence because I just watched them get blown off the ball on both sides against Houston. And I'm not sure this is the same Ravens team from 2 years ago. I mean, they have Ray Rice, they have Flacco, they have Ed Reed and Suggs and Ray Lewis. Like, but a couple of those guys aren't the same players anymore.
I agree that they're not the same players. And I think Brady doesn't make the mistakes that Yates makes. I mean, I really think, like, if Yates had gone to a conservative game plan, they would have won that game. Just Owen Daniels was open a few times. Like, you could see it. Just go underneath a little more or work Foster a little more on those screens. Like, if you throw deep, Ed Reed's going to find your guy. He really is. He's just going to end up back there. And that's why I don't think it's a problem for the Pats. They'll spread out those tight ends, and they'll be fine. And here's what I do if I'm the Patriots. I go to Ocho Cinco, and I say, you have been abysmal this year, and you should do three life sentences for cashing paychecks that we wrote. On the other hand, you can make it all up to us if you just run deep every route. Every time Brady goes back to pass, we need you running deep just to get Reed to cheat. And if he doesn't, we'll throw it to you. We'll throw it out of bounds because we don't want it to, you know, we don't need you to screw it up. But I think that's the key right there. You can beat the team underneath. You'll rack up yards and win.
Reed got hurt.
Yeah.
And on the last play, T.J. Yates, 0 TDs and 3 picks, but somehow managed to get Ed Reed hurt in the last play of the game, and I think he's questionable for this week. But
let's buy him an arrangement. I think the MRI came back negative, but yeah.
We'll be limping around, though.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
The other game, I had the Niners by 2.5. What did you have?
I said maybe if they're even, give the Niners 3. And then I said, no way. Everyone's gonna prey off the fact that Giants just knocked the best team out of football, and there's gonna be giant money in there. And I said it's gonna go down to 2. I said 2. You said 2.5, and it's 2.5. So you win, my friend.
Oh,
yeah. Now what happened to that? I don't think that goes to 3. I think that goes a little lower, if anything.
I think it stays where it is for 5 days, and then on Saturday morning drops to 1.5. And I think that could get to pick 'em by game time.
All right,
I think all these sharps are sitting on the Giants.
You, me, and everyone else right now, just looking at it, loves a Giants plus 8.5, New England minus 1.5 teaser.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe tease. I don't think it's an obvious tease. It's not like when you're looking at Ravens 7.5, Packers 7.5, and just the natural inclination is to tease those two teams and not even think twice about it.
Right.
In this case, I need to see because – I want to read one person pick the Saints or make a case. I mean, pick the Niners or make a case for them. Because if we're at the point now where everybody is just penciling in the Super Bowl 42 rematch, we all know how football works. It never works out that way. Anytime there's the rematch sitting there or some great game or some, it always gets screwed up. There's always a party crasher. There's always somebody who's not invited. And that would be my fear with that game, especially if the Pats took care of business first.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, oh yeah, Super Bowl 42 rematch. Here we go.
It is weird how that works out. You can get plus 180, plus 180 for Pats Giants rematch right now. You could get plus 130 for Pats Niners matchup Super Bowl. You get plus 525 for Baltimore, San Francisco, and plus 675 for Baltimore Giants.
Plus 180 for a Super Bowl 42 rematch.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. That would have been more fun to bet before the year. That would have been, I mean, before the playoffs, that would have probably been like 25-30-1.
Yeah, that would have been higher. Yeah. Well, I think the Giants alone were 25-1. So.
Yeah.
But what do you think the Super Bowl odds are right now, AFC, NFC? Plus, it was NFC minus 4 heading into this week.
NFC was 4-point favorites heading into this week.
And they lost their 15-win team, and they lost their 13-win team.
And now I think the AFC is favored by 3.5 points.
All right. AFC is favored by 4.
Whoa!
And 8-point swing in 24 hours.
Holy mackerel.
The over-under is 50, and I think if New England gets there, I think jump on the over is the best bet right now. I mean, on that Indianapolis turf, you know, unless it's Ravens, Niners, I think that 50 is low.
We talk about this every year. That is one of the great bets, that AFC-NFC Super Bowl bet. It shifts constantly. It's like watching like a stock or something. It goes way up, goes way down.
One year. We just never win, but it is great.
But we always have it at the exact wrong time is when we jump on it usually. But, man, 3.5 for the Pats now. So you could basically, if you think the Giants are going to beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, you're better off betting. Well, what are the Giants odds to win the Super Bowl?
Well, the Giants are plus 350. Giants and Niners are exactly 350, 7-2 odds to win the Super Bowl. Pats are plus 110. You get slightly better than even. And the Ravens are plus 600. Now, if the Pats beat the Ravens before the NFC game, they'll probably be minus 180 right away, right?
So we think we shouldn't guess the lines ahead of time, but I think Pats Niners, I think, would get to 7. 6.5, 7, something like that. I think Pats Giants would be 3.5.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people would be making the case that this Giants team is built perfectly to beat the Pats. What a great Super Bowl. I mean, it's in Indianapolis, which is kind of interesting, too. Like, you talk about, like, the Patriots exercising different demons.
Yeah.
To be able to win a Super Bowl in Indianapolis during the year that the Manning era kind of died. Bill Polian got fired. That's another interesting component to this.
Well, what about Eli playing where his brother, winning a Super Bowl where his brother's home court, right? That's
another interesting component to this, because Eli is now 2 wins away from having 2 Super Bowls, which would be twice as bad as his brother. And he's like, how many years younger is he, like 6?
I don't know. I hate that team. I mean, as a Cowboys fan, like, the only thing I had left to root for was late in the fourth quarter of Coughlin's frozen face bleeding off, and that didn't happen. I was like, what can I do here?
And then if it's Baltimore, San Fran for some reason, you got the Harbaugh brothers. That would be beating the ground
for 2 weeks.
That was
good enough for 3 days, Thanksgiving weekend. I mean, we don't need that again.
If you have Patriots, San Fran, I think the angles would be Tom Brady against the team he grew up rooting for, and then Jim Harbaugh's for Super Bowl.
And then also the five. Well, does San Fran have 5 Super Bowls? I'm going to get this wrong, but they have 5 and.
Yeah, something like that. And then, and then he'd win as many as. Did Montana? Montana won 4 Super Bowls, so it'd be Brady tie Montana.
Right.
And then the other one would be Baltimore Giants.
Rematch.
Yeah, a little rematch from a Super Bowl nobody ever talks about.
Right. Yeah.
But was the Super Bowl that I won the most money I've ever won on a Super Bowl. I hit every bet. It was like
it was
the Bishop and Caddyshack Super Bowl for me.
Mm-hmm.
But some good storylines here. The Giants getting in there is your worst-case scenario. Anything involving the Giants is your worst-case scenario, right?
For me, yeah. Here's what I needed at the beginning of the week. I'm like, I need this Tebow thing to go away. I need the Giants to go away. So I was asking too much that both would happen. We're stuck with the Giants in the Super Bowl. I'm sorry. That's just my life.
Nice reverse jinx. I like it. Anything to plug?
Let me go over this call real quick. I forget. You know, I changed my number and everything. Yeah, because these calls were getting out of hand, so I had to. But you still ended up finding me during the game Saturday. I don't know what happened, but let me play this for you.
Cousin Sal. Sports guy here. Just polished off a plate of fish and chips, soaked in Sam Adams Harvest Pumpkin Cranberry Lambic. I'm three sheets and a down comforter to the wind. Just finished watching the Patriots game. My beloved Pats demolished the Broncos, and my ex-boyfriend, Tim Twinkle Toes Tender Trap Teriyaki Thighs Tebow. Watching game, I was torn like a piece of London broil on Paul Pierce's gullet. Don't even get me started on that fat bastard. Anyway, I disregarded my own playoff manifesto rule, number 316, subsection N, paragraph H, which says, never date a guy whose throwing arm is ravaged with hepatitis and rickets. So we broke up. I had to let him go. Even though he said he wrote a funny part for me in Fourth and God, I was going to be played by Glenn Scarpelli, the funny little scamp from One Day at a Time. Oh, no, nice. What's this? My BlackBerry Bold is acting up. It's coming alive, and it's playing awful music. Make it stop. Make it stop. Where's this music I'm talking about? It's not working, and I've been struck by lightning. I love you, Akeem Dix.
Technical difficulties in the phone call?
I call out everything except Tim Tebow's fire by the St. Elmo's fire guy.
Boo.
Oh, here we go. All right, that's it. Just the laziest remake in pop history right there.
Yeah, can I just say, as somebody who loved the year of Tebow and somebody who still loves St. Elmo's Fire, I was crestfallen by that remake, and it made me feel sad, and I feel like we all need to send John Parr money.
He changed three words. Insane. I got it.
That doesn't even make
Tebow
sense.
He rhymes with Elmo.
Tebow's
this
fire.
Is what I've been waiting for 25 years.
The song doesn't even make sense.
I know.
I can feel the fire burning. It's Tim Tebow's fire? What?
Oh, God.
You got to get permission from Rob Lowe and Judd Nelson and the whole gang, I think, too. And it just seems like John Parr went rogue. I didn't appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. I wrote in the Grantland column that young Demi Moore is shivering, waiting for that song to end, shivering in a room by herself. But... And as long as we're promoting things, the Grantland runs Thursday, my blog. I won a couple of my big props, up 33,000 Your Majesties for the week.
Nice.
I had the Texans over sacks, and Breeze will throw an interception. And that's it. And on Jimmy Kimmel Live, Don Cheadle tonight, David Cross, Boys to Men. Later in the week, Catherine Heigl, Will Arnett, Tom Arnold, Terrence Howard, Thomas Horn.
All right, Cousin Sal, I'll see you on the left coast.
You got it, Billy.
Good job by you. All right, let's bring in our NFL expert from NFL.com and NFL Network, and the man who was on the phone with me on Friday as we talked about what the hell was going to happen with that Packers-Giants game, and we were both prepared for one of two options. And as it turned out, it was the second option and not the one I picked. Mike Lombardi, what's happening?
Hi, Bill. How are you?
You know, how big of an effect do you think the offensive coordinator's son, the tragic death. Wait, tell me how that affects a football team, because obviously from the outside, you know, we don't know. We don't know these guys. We don't know how close people are. Like, when you have a tragedy like that, walk me through how that affects the preparation going into a game.
Well, I think ultimately it's and this is a lack of a better word, but a distraction in terms of everyone's trying to focus on helping the Philbin family as opposed to trying to beat the next opponent. And the grief that goes through this is difficult. And when you look at Oklahoma State, the women's basketball team that happened before they played Iowa State, it does have an effect on preparation in terms of your ability to concentrate and your heartfelt feelings for what happened and the events that transpired. So, look, the Packers didn't play well enough to win the game. Their execution was not what we had seen all season from them. I mean, it was a rare performance by their offense, and we know their defense wasn't good enough to carry them, but we thought their offense would be much better, and yesterday it wasn't.
Yeah, and I do think distractions of I hate using that word, but when you think about, like, how you just have to be locked in the playoffs, and in a sports movie, something bad happens, and the team rallies behind, but in real life, it just seems like over and over again we see this that it just seems like it affects everybody, and it should. You know, it's a pretty sad thing that happened. With that said, the game was very reminiscent of that Chiefs game where the Packers just shot themselves in the foot
over and over again through four quarters, and you could kind of feel it in that first quarter. When did you feel like the Giants were locked in to win in that game?
Well, I thought when they put their best corner on Jordy Nelson, I thought they got the way to beat the Packers. To me, everyone talks about Jennings, JerMichael Finley, both outstanding players, but they don't really focus on the guy that has beaten teams down the road. The last time they played them, they had Will Blackman covering Jordy Nelson, and that didn't work out so well. So this game,
right,
they went with Prince Akamura and put him over there and really put the game plan about making sure Jordy Nelson didn't beat him. And I think when you saw that early in the game, you knew that from playing them the first time, they got a really good understanding of what it was going to take to beat him. Now, could Finley beat him? Could Jennings beat him? Yeah, but they were going to double Jennings. They were going to make sure he couldn't, and man and a half up on Finley and see how else the running game could hold up and see how else the other players on the Packers could beat him. And ultimately, that didn't transpire.
Rodgers, got victimized by a couple drops. I didn't feel like he played well. I thought he missed some pretty big throws. And, you know, just from a demeanor standpoint, looked off. How much of the blame of that game do you put on him?
Well, it was interesting. The both games, the Saints and the Packer game, both quarterbacks, Rodgers and Breeze, you felt like watching the game, they kept trying to make a throw up the field, and there was really no throw to make up the field. It looked like part of their offense was stagnant in the terms that they were wanting to extend the field, wanting to make a big play, and they were growing frustrated each time they couldn't throw it up the field, which lent itself to a sense of desperation. So I think, you know, Rodgers didn't play well. His timing didn't seem perfect. It didn't seem in rhythm. I mean, the throw to Finley on a key third down play, which should have been a first down, where he leads him and Finley kind of slows down and stops. And the frustration you saw after Rodgers on that play, you could sense that they weren't in rhythm. But I think it comes back to the Giants basically said, you're not going to run the ball on us. You really don't care about running, so we'll play a seven-man front against you. We'll hold up in the run, and we'll take away your best receivers and see how you do. It's the formula they used to beat the Patriots, and it's the formula they used to beat the Packers. And I think having played them, I think it allowed them to expand themselves and really understand what they were doing.
Do you think that's something we underrate when a team has played somebody within the first six, seven weeks of the game? Because, you know, Denver played the Patriots 5 weeks ago and it didn't help them at all. Is it just a case-by-case basis?
It's the matchups. It's all about matchups. I mean, really, the football, like at basketball, comes down to, can you match up? Do you have the players to match up? And with Osi Umenora coming back, it clearly helps the Giants' defensive front match up to the Packers. It gives them another advantage there. Plus, they knew what receivers and how they run their routes and how they run their offense or call their offense, and you kind of get a feel for it as you're going through the game. And I think it does help you if you can win some of the matchups, where for Denver, for instance, their safeties were never going to cover Hernandez or Gronkowski or really defend the middle of the field. So how many times they play the Patriots, I don't think they're ever going to get closer than what they did. And the more the Patriots play Tebow, the better off they were going to be against Tebow.
And I felt like the Texans knew how to play the Ravens. And if Yates makes any throws in that game, they probably win. And if Schaub's in that game, they win. But, you know, they were right there. And you think, like, the Texans were down 17-3, and they had handed over a punt fumble on, like, their own five. And, you know, everything that goes wrong can go wrong for them in that first quarter. And then the next two and a half quarters, I thought they dominated the game. And I thought their line dominated the game. Would you agree that if Schaub plays in that game, Houston advances?
First play of the game is a touchdown pass. He throws the short route to Andre Johnson, and he's got Kevin Walter behind the defense. Nobody's there. Now, CBS didn't show us the replay, but when you watch the game tape, it's clear. And from really that moment on, Yates really was all about self-preservation as opposed to trying to make a play. And had they had Matt Schaub in the game, I think they're the better team. You watch the game tape, and it's fairly obvious that the Houston Texans are the better team. They just didn't have the better quarterback on that day. And when you can win a playoff game gaining 227 yards, converting 25% on third down, really not doing anything offensively, it's really you're fortunate to walk away with the victory. And it was because of the unfortunate injury to Schaub that they were able to do this. Had it been Tom Brady on that field, this would never have happened.
Would you say, I felt like the Houston offensive line, the Houston defensive line, other than what we saw from the Giants defensive line, I thought were the best two units we saw in round two. I thought they dominated the line of scrimmage on both sides. It's kind of amazing that a quarterback could single-handedly decide a game.
They did dominate it. I mean, when you go back and watch this team play, the Ravens play the last month of the season, you know, going back to San Diego, they don't get any pressure on the passer. They really have struggled really creating pressure on the passer from Terrell Suggs and from their inside players. So quarterbacks have had an opportunity to make plays against them. They just haven't. I mean, there was a time when you and I were watching the Cincinnati game, we felt like Cincinnati was the better team because they were protecting.
Yeah.
They protected in both games. And it's the same thing that happened here. The Houston offensive line did a great job of protecting. They ran the football effectively. And they did a great job of controlling the defensive front against a Raven offense, which is very generic at best. So, but again, you know, the quarterback has to make two or three plays, and he has to limit his mistakes. I mean, I thought they were going to tie the game up as they drove it down the field, and then he takes a chance on a dumb throw down, throws it into coverage. It's just ridiculous. It's a dumb play by a young quarterback who's obviously going to grow from it. But had Matt Schaub been there, different ballgame.
And Baltimore, I thought, just a play calling abomination, really bad coaching decisions. I couldn't believe on that fourth and inches. I know Ray Rice is a great running back, but for the play that they ran, not to have Ricky Williams in for that play, he knocks that guy forward. He scores on that touchdown. The game's over. But just in general, it just seemed like either they ran it straight into the line or they ran those kind of pseudo Hail Mary down the sideline 30-yard lob passes to their receivers, and that was it. It was like they had no other plays. You know, I felt like Houston was so, you know, they're going to be kicking themselves, I think, for the next few months about that game. I thought they had
a better
game. It's
going to be a tough tape for Houston to watch and really stomach and not ask the question, what if, all the time. Baltimore,
yeah,
offensively, you know, they talk about them being a power run team, and really they're a zone stretch team. And because they're a zone stretch team, they don't create any movement in the offensive line. You know, Bryant McKinney's not going to create any movement. Matt Burke's a little too old to create movement. And I think really the more you watch their run game, it's about the zone stretch play. It's about trying to find bubbles within the defense. And when everyone's covered up, it becomes a little bit more difficult. And if they can't really run the ball effectively, their passing game isn't going to be able to carry the team all the way through and make the plays it has to make, because everything's set up off of Ray Rice's ability to run the football, but also Ray Rice's ability to catch the ball in screens and do all that. Remember, Rice is the leading receiver and he's the leading pass catcher on the team by a lot. So Rice doesn't impact the game. Baltimore's offense starts to struggle.
And
I don't think
like
you're going to see. You're not going to see the New England Patriots allow Ray Rice to control the game like the 49ers, like the Saints allowed Frank Gore and Vernon Davis to control that game.
And it seemed like Houston was just sitting on those screen passes for Ray Rice. They just knew that you know, this is happening 5-6 times a game, and we are going to have somebody here every time. And the other thing with Ray Rice, you've seen him have games like that before where it's like 2 yards, 3 yards, 1 yard, 3 yards. But then he'll break the 50-yarder. And in that game, he just didn't. And, you know, I was watching it in the fourth quarter thinking Ray Rice is going to break one. This game's going to be over. It never really happened. Now you look forward to the Patriots game, and it just seems like that this just could not have worked out better for the Patriots. They get Tebow in round two and that really crappy Denver defense. Now they have this Baltimore team that just got beaten on both sides of the ball against Houston. Did this just break perfectly for the Pats or what?
Well, I think Baltimore's going to have to prove in this game they can handle spread passing games. Now, they haven't been able to do that. They played San Diego. They gave up 34 points. They haven't played a lot of spread passing games for the most part. They've played Pittsburgh well both times they played them. Pittsburgh's a spread passing team at times. But I think they'll struggle with New England in the matchups, especially when you break the Ravens down this way. The middle of the field, they don't have the players that can control the middle of the field. I know Ray Lewis is, you know, beyond reproach in terms of, even though he gets older, nobody thinks he doesn't play as well. But the reality is he's going to struggle covering any of these tight ends. And I think their safeties, Pollard and Ed Reed, are going to struggle to really match up against the tight ends and control the middle of the field, which is then going to create a problem on the outside. So this is a tough matchup for Baltimore. I think they know this will be a tough matchup, because if they don't get pressure on Brady, if they don't find a way to win that matchup, putting pressure Suggs or someone else creating Brady to have a hard time and break up his rhythm, they're going to move the football effectively on him.
And if the Patriots score, let's say, 30 points, from what you've seen from this Baltimore team, can they match that kind of point output against the Patriots?
The only way they can do that is if they hit Torrey Smith on vertical routes. Torrey Smith has 7 touchdowns for the season. He's their big play down the field guy. If they do that, or if Bolden makes a play down the field in traffic and catches the football like he did against the Arizona Cardinals, then they can score some points and they're productive in the red zone. But for the most part, if the Patriots say, Ray Rice, you're not beating us, and we're not giving you the deep throw, the first three plays of the Baltimore game were so much symbolic of who the Baltimore Ravens are on offense. The first play of the game, they run the bob play, which is a lead play with Ray Rice. It gets stopped. The second play of the game, they run a go route to Torrey Smith. That's another staple. The third play of the game, they run what we call F-post, which is motion the back out and run somebody on a post pattern on the inside, try to attack the middle of the defense. All three plays were stopped. They had to punt the ball. If the Patriots stop those three concepts, the lead play, the nine routes, and the F-post, it's going to be hard for Baltimore to move the football.
Is the Patriots' defense underrated? Somebody sent me a great email about their defense in the second half of games for the last, like, 12 weeks, and whatever happens in the first half does not happen in the second half for this team. And, you know, you think, like, think of all the guys that they had out there the first few weeks that they got rid of. Lee Bottom was hurt. Dowling was banged up. They put him on IR. Like, I don't know who half of these guys are, and a lot of Patriots fans don't, but it seems like collectively they're really playing well. I thought they were going to collapse after Andre Carter got hurt, and instead Anderson's come in and given them what Carter has. Is this defense underrated?
I think their defensive front's a little underrated. I think Vince Wilfork's played really well. I think Gerard Warren played outstanding the other night. They physically controlled the line of scrimmage against the Broncos. You talk about pushing that offensive line back, creating a pocket. Ninkovich is an unsung player. He rushes well. Think about when he plays against the Jets. Think about when he plays against the better teams. He always seems to make a play, whether it's catching whether it's an interception. They are a little bit underrated. I think with Chung back, it really helps. And I think with Brandon Spikes in the middle of the defense, it helps. And having Mayo healthy, that also helps. So, I mean, Baltimore's going to move the football on them because New England's defense isn't a lockdown defense. But the key is going to be, can New England keep the pace of the game moving and have to make Baltimore into a desperate offense? And if they do that, that's when Baltimore's not very good.
And Baltimore's got some old farts out there. You saw the Pats use that no huddle, so effective. And I look at what they were able to do with that no huddle, and it's actually so effective that I wonder if they try not to overuse it, because when they do use it, it's such a weapon. Isn't that what they're going to do against Baltimore this week?
Well, Baltimore's going to have to choose their poison, because New England's going to make them play a nickel defense the entire game, which now means Ray Lewis is going to play on the field all the time in nickel situations, which now means Baltimore knows it, New England knows it, most everybody knows it except the national media and fans, that Ray Lewis is going to have to rush the pocket. He's not going to be able to cover as well. So that's where they're going to have to choose their decisions. If we get into a man-to-man game, that means we're going to have to blitz Ray and live with our ability to cover these tight ends. If we play a zone pressure game, we'll blitz Ray and see if we can hold up on some of these concepts. It's a different game. Yesterday, they could play their base defense, and they could hide the middle of the field a little bit, especially with T.J. Yates. But when it becomes a full-court spread field, now all of a sudden Baltimore has to extend their defense. They have to put a corner on the field that they're not as comfortable with. It puts Pollard in a position of where his strength isn't very good, which is in terms of range. It puts Ray Lewis in a position to have to cover. I think these issues add up, and then all of a sudden the volume becomes a problem. It may not happen in the first quarter, but by the fourth quarter it will.
And Gronkowski, is there anybody in the Ravens who can cover him?
There's nobody in the league that can cover him. I mean, this is a problem for everybody. I mean, these two tight ends, and to me, Hernandez is the most difficult of all of them, because Hernandez has wide receiver quickness at tight end with tight end physical strength.
Yeah.
So no one can cover Hernandez. So what they did last week was, by putting Hernandez out there with the two tight ends and the three receivers, they made Denver have to declare Hernandez as whatever he was. And when they put him in the backfield, that became a unique problem for him, because they didn't think he was ever going to run the ball.
Right.
So now the matchups are favoring the Patriots, and they'll do something creative in this game to force Pollard, to force Lewis, to force one of their bad cover guys to have to cover one of these tight ends. They can create the matchups. What I think the Ravens have to do is hope that they can hold up in the running game with a light box and force the Patriots to try to run the ball more than throw it.
And what do they do about Ocho Cinco? I mean, the guy's been unstoppable. How do they stop him?
He's not going to play, probably, because when they're in that no huddle, fast paced game, they can't trust Ocho Cinco to know what he's going to do. So they can't keep, you know, why put him out there if he's going to make a mistake? And why would you take off Hernandez off the field to put Ocho Cinco on there? That's why it cracks me up. People say, well, he only played one play last week. Well, who's he better than? Who's he better than? Who do you want to take off the field to put him on the field?
We're 20 weeks into the season, and I still don't know what situation Ocho Cinco could be valuable in. I'm not even sure why he's on the team. It's been unclear for 10 weeks why he's been on the team. But
he's on the team because he's got quickness. He still can run. If you work him out, he still has an effective talent. But the problem is he can't channel that talent and that an ability into learning what to do in terms of in this offense. And we've seen this before with New England, whether it's been Joey Galloway, whomever it's been. The receiver position for this offense is like trying to get into Harvard. It's very difficult. And Brady's not going to throw you the football if you don't know where you're going.
They've had like 8 cracks at that one guy to just run a straight line down the field, which is open every season for them. And Moss was the only guy who could really do it. And, you know, you even look at that what Deion Branch scored on that game. When you have those two tight ends over the middle, that route down the sideline is open almost every time. So, Baltimore.
Well, I want to read you this email. A guy sent me a tremendous guy. Always has these little nuggets that he sends me. But the last time they played in 09, here were the Patriots who caught passes for their offense. Edelman, Moss, Falk, Maroney, Slater, Watson, and Baker.
Oh, God. Yeah, and this is the tragedy of the Tom Brady era, which for, you know, other than the Bernard Power, I guess that was a true tragedy. But, you know, this is a guy who was really made to throw to tight ends. He was fantastic at it, and yet for years and years, they tried to get lucky twice with tight ends with Ben Watson and Daniel Graham, and it just didn't work out. Now he has arguably 2 of the 3 best catching tight ends in the league. And I think they've been pretty good. If you're a Baltimore fan, it seems like the only thing you have going for you this week is the nobody believes in us thing.
No, but
why
I
is anybody
Baltimore,
picking Baltimore?
I mean, look at Ed Reed's comments after the game. I think Baltimore is living off the 09 game. They think they can walk in there and beat them. I think New England's going to be the team who has to take the nobody thinks we can beat Baltimore approach. I don't think Baltimore is going to be lacking of confidence at all. I don't get that sense at all. I think Baltimore thinks they're still the 2000 and 2000 defensive team. I think Baltimore still thinks, I'm talking about conceptually from the fans, that this defense is still an upper echelon, top-level defense because they've been. I mean, but when you look at the quarterbacks that they faced during the season, you know, they did it, you know, Ben, they beat, which give them tremendous credit for that. But, you know, you want to go through the list of quarterbacks that they've played other than Phillip Rivers, you know, Ben. All right, here we go. They go Ben. Then they go Matt Hasselbeck. They lose. They go Sam Bradford, who can't block anybody. They go Mark Sanchez. They beat Matt Schaub, which was a great win. Jacksonville, they lose to. Arizona, they lose to. Pittsburgh, they beat. Seattle, they lose. I mean, it just goes on and on. It's your defense is only as good as when you play against the best quarterbacks. Can you slow them down?
Going to the NFC, Giants at San Francisco. I watched this game. I forget, it was like 8 weeks ago. It was a great game. It was really enjoyable. And Eli made one mistake, and the Giants lost. This Giants team, you know, I think some of the focus today has been on Green Bay and just such a weird performance by them. But would you agree that Giants performance was one of the best performances of the season, if not the best performance?
No question, and with their ability to act so confident about doing it too. I mean, they were never thinking that, oh no, the tide's going to turn here. Here comes Green Bay coming back on us. I mean, they were confident, and they made the plays when they had to. I think this whole perception that you can cover people is wrong because the Giants proved it. The Sluggo seam route to Jennings that's wide open. Umanora knocks the ball out. It's a touchdown. It's probably the play of the game. But because they were able to put pressure on the passer, they win the game. And I think that's ultimately why this Giant team was never going to be one of those teams that was easily eliminated. And look, let's face it. If Romo throws a complete pass to Miles Austin, and if they make any field goal in the Arizona Cardinal game, the Giants are like the Packers last year. They shouldn't even be in the tournament. But they are, and they're really a team that nobody wants to play.
And they're also healthy. And I think now that they have their 3 D linemen all doing their thing, that is as good of a unit as anybody has in the entire league. And then Eli has 2 guys that he can throw to that can make big plays at any point in the game, and they can run the ball. And it just seems like they have a ton of confidence. They've been there before. And now you look at Eli,
do we have to put Eli now on that category with Breeze, Rodgers, and Brady?
He's played that way all season. And, I mean, he's carried this team when the lulls happen. You know, when Amon Bradshaw's not on their team, they're a different team. I mean, let's face it, you know, Brandon Jacobs is a nice change of pace player, but Bradshaw makes this whole offense go. He makes it have to defend the width of the field. And, you know, I think Eli's been the one single factor that's carried the team all the way through. And yesterday he was the better quarterback on that field. He made the plays that he had to make. I mean, the jump ball at the end of the half is really a stupid mistake by Green Bay to make. But give him credit. Eli makes the throw down the field and they make the play.
I give you a choice of any quarterback heading into the playoffs, and they all have the exact same team. Would you take Brady first?
Yeah, I think I'm taking Brady first. The way he played, I was at that game. I don't think there was a better performance you could have had. He threw the ball perfectly other than the one interception. He put it in the right spot. Plus, I don't think Tom gets enough credit for what he does at the line of scrimmage and how he's able to manipulate things based on this personnel that he can set up on the field and the arsenal that they give him in terms of the playbook. I think it's really been outstanding, and he's gotten rid of the football. He's done a tremendous job. I mean, when Brady's operating like this with confidence, I think having Josh McDaniels back and having Bill O'Brien there gives Brady a sense there's another person in the room that can talk the same language with him. I think that really helps him.
Second pick, Breeze, Rodgers, or Eli?
Well, you know, Rodgers over the season played so well, but right now you'd have to pick Eli because he beat him. And Breeze,
I kind of agree.
Breeze in that game was struggling. I mean, Drew was really having a hard time. I think what that game proved in San Francisco is that the Saints, for all their talent on offense, they really lack a playmaking receiver, somebody who can separate. Marquise Colston is going to go out in free agency and somebody's going to think he's going to get a ton of money. But I think really when you study him on tape, he doesn't run fast enough, especially outdoors. He's a jump ball receiver. And I think the Saints, as crazy as it sounds, I don't think they needed another running back in Mark Ingram. I think they needed an explosive receiver more than anything.
Yeah, I don't want to discount the Saints too much, but this was the rap on them going into that San Francisco game, is that indoors versus outdoors, they were a different team. They played like it again. It just seems like they make more mistakes. I think that advantage of just knowing that you're playing indoors for 75 to 80% of the season, whereas somebody like Brady, who played indoors, I think, three times total, and, you know, seems like he can play in any sort of scenario. But I do wonder, like, Breeze, are we going to look back at some of his records and his marks, and does that indoor thing, and same thing maybe with Manning a little bit, does that indoor thing and having a perfect environment almost every time you play football, does that matter more than we think it does?
I think it really is an advantage. I think it's a tremendous advantage. And then, for the quarterback, but for the team in general. I mean, you want to be on a team. Could you imagine the Giants team if they played in a dome with that defensive front? Could you imagine what they could do with the crowd noise going crazy with this defensive front that they have and the way they can do things? I think it's an advantage, and it takes away from your ability to run the football. So when you play them in a dome, a team like that plays New Orleans, it's hard to run the football. It's hard to keep you off balance. Well, people say, well, the Lions only ran 10 times. Well, it's hard to make a living running against them when you can't get off the ball and can't get off the snap count. So I think that dome is really – nobody really wants to talk about it. I think the way you build your team, and I said this last week about Atlanta, is you have to evaluate your team outdoors. I think that's where the Saints have to really spend more time this year studying their team on outdoor games and really evaluating their players correctly in the outdoor games, because we know the home games, there's a residual value in that dome. We just can't measure it, but we can only measure it outdoors.
And Kurt Warner and the Rams are, you know, going a little bit further back, but another example of a team that always seemed a little bit differently when they were indoors versus outdoors.
You know, the field's perfect, the protection, and what, you know, when you're in New England, you're in this weekend, how cold it is. Do you know how hard it is to kick a cold ball? Do you know how hard it is to catch a cold ball? Those things are not easy. Now, San Francisco could really, the 49ers have, I mean, the Saints have had a better weather day than they had. It couldn't have worked out better for them, right?
No.
And they still turned the ball over like they couldn't wait to give the game away. I mean, Saints fans can walk away from that saying, look, if we don't turn the ball over, we win the game. There's no question. You know, they play that game on a neutral field and they don't turn the ball over, the Saints are going to win 8 out of 10 times. But you know, that's not what happened. And the 49ers, as we thought, would take advantage of it, and they did.
Yeah, and we haven't talked about them yet. A legit win. They had basically two game-winning drives. They came through. Alex Smith came through and answered. I don't know if he answered every question I've had about him, but, you know, I think if out of anybody who needed to win a game like that, I would put Alex Smith at the top of the list. Maybe Flacco would be second. But I thought Alex Smith was great. And now, you look back at this is his seventh year. We assume that this guy was a lost cause. But you think back to how dysfunctional those coaching staffs were, never really had a receiver. He's, was expected to be the savior. Nothing went right for this guy. Can you be a late bloomer as a franchise quarterback?
Well, I think the whole mentality of their team helps them, too. You know, this is a tough-minded team that, you know, the team in that final two-minute drive really elevates its game. And so Alex Smith elevated his game, and you give him complete credit for that because I think the whole environment, they have this tougher-than-anyone attitude, really helps Alex Smith because they all have confidence in him. And they get a situation where I really don't know what Greg Williams is trying to accomplish with his blitzes at the end of the game. At some point, you got to take away the two best players of the opponent team. At some point, you got to say, we're not going to let Vernon Davis get in a one-on-one matchup against somebody that can't cover him. I mean, there's not enough being said about, I think, the poor matchup element of what the Saints did against the 49ers. Because the 49ers, you better beat them because they're not going to beat themselves. They are tough-minded and they're competitive all the way from the start of the game to the end.
Right. And Vernon Davis, as you said, was the guy that could hurt them on either of those last two drives and somehow was able to get open again and again. Really bizarre. It made me wonder what would happen if Greg Williams ever went against Cam Cameron. And I don't know who comes out on top on that one, but it'd be interesting.
It was, you know, you're sitting there watching this and you're saying to yourself, is he really going to let Vernon Davis go out there, extend himself and make – and look, Alex Smith was great, and I've been hard on Alex Smith. He was tremendous, but it's a high school throw to throw it over a guy's shoulder when it's one-on-one coverage out there. I mean, that's not something that's hard to do for any quarterback. I mean, T.J. Yates could make those throws. If you know it's man and you're going to play the way he played, you've got to make that play. I mean, that's just football 101, and I think really the Saints have to look at what they did and say, you know what, they got so caught up in who they are in terms of blitzing as opposed to taking away the opponent. I mean, you know basketball. I mean, if you're going to lose to a team that has a great player, make somebody else shoot the ball. Don't make him shoot the ball. And they never took the ball away from Vernon Davis.
All right, so San Fran and the New York Giants, a great, great game. I enjoyed it the first time around. I'm going to enjoy it even more this time around. Giants fans very confident. And they want the Patriots. Patriots fans kind of want the Giants fans. It would be,
and then there's the Harbaugh element. Everybody wants the Harbaugh Super Bowl. I don't know if we could. Could you imagine 2 weeks of a Harbaugh Super Bowl? We might need to bring Tim Tebow back just for that.
And the dad would become the Larry Fitzgerald Sr. of this year. I'm not ready for that. Or the Archie Manning. San Fran Giants, who do you like?
I like the Giants. I think the Giants are, I mean, they played them out there once. We know they learned from their mistakes. They had an opportunity to send the game into overtime. They made a lot of mistakes in the game. I think they can throw the football. They match up well against them. And I think this is a team nobody really wants to play right now. You go into Green Bay and you soundly defeat the Packers, a team that's supposed to be the best team in the league, which everyone had. I think there's a sense of confidence, and I think clearly you think you can do it. And there's this, I don't want to call it this almost like magical theory, but I think they really are. And they're tough-minded, too. Look, the Giants aren't going to quit. The Giants are good. They're going to compete with the 49ers, and I think they have a sense that they can go out there and play. Weather's going to play a factor. I understand it's going to be one of those bad weather, rainy, wet days, so I don't know how that's going to factor into it, but I think the Giants win the game.
Wow. But you realize this is all set up for another Jim Harbaugh nobody believes in us week because everybody's going to pick the Giants, I feel like. Everybody's ready for Super Bowl 42, the rematch. And people are going to say the Niners, they won their game. They had their moment. Now it's time for the real teams to play in the Super Bowl. And you know Harbaugh's going to feed off that. I'm just saying.
Well, I think, but this is championship weekend. And if your team needs some outlaying motivating factor to get ready, then your team doesn't belong there anyway. So
it's a very good point.
I think that, you know, at this point, throw all the cliches out the window. I mean, whether New England's going to use the 09 tape, the Ray Rice 80-yard play, I'm sure they're going to get tired of seeing that. I think that this is now, and the Patriots will take their approach, and the Ravens will take their approach, and the 49ers will take their approach. It's going to come down to how we play. Everybody's going to play their best. It's how our best matches up against the other team.
If you had to bet on one team to win the Super Bowl right now, who would you pick?
It's the Giants. I mean, they have that Packer-like feeling to them. They almost shouldn't have gotten in. And now that they're in, they're dangerous because they have what we always talk about. They have a great pass rush, then they have a hot quarterback, and they've got playmakers at receiver. I mean, you really, when you break them down, they're the team that, you know, now, look, somebody could say the same thing about the 49ers, too. Great pass rush, a hot quarterback. You know, that could go a long way as well.
That's going to be some game. I'm really excited for that game, and obviously excited for the Pats, too. I am excited for next Sunday, and I'm sure we will be texting throughout. Mike Lombardi, I will call you on Friday for counsel on my picks. As always, thanks for the time. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Bill.
So I get to sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.